Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday the 26th of August, recording at 9:09 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And first, though, let's start with a review of the week. Well, it's been a fairly turbulent one, hasn't it? In stock markets, starting with the Asia-Pacific region, subdued performances, more weak than strong. An exception would be the China sector, which has been firmer. And for once, the ASEAN sector, which had been such a phenomenal relative strength performer, has seen some significant profit taking. It's markets such as Malaysia have been, Singapore have been clipped, less so the Philippines, Indonesia, and Thailand, although those are technically vulnerable, and they've been experiencing much more volatility of late. The European stock markets have also been quite choppy, but for the most part holding up above those lows that we saw on the 8th and 9th of August. In the Americas, a similar sort of story. Today was quite interesting, though, because we had Bernanke speaking from Jackson Hole in Wyoming. And sensibly, and I must say to my relief, having talked and spoken, written and spoken about the laws of unintended consequences, and I was worried that he'd say too much, but he said very little, actually, in terms of what he was going to do, beyond mentioning that he had that the Fed had tools, but without being specific about those tools, and also he took a bit of a gentle swipe at the government, saying that it wasn't just monetary policy that could deal with today's problems, or there were limits to what monetary policy could do. And the fiscal policy was important, and that's certainly true. And I think the market's initial reaction, rather naively, was to dive. The Dow fell a couple of hundred points or more very quickly. And I say naive because people had been expecting that Bernanke would sort of give the economy or give the market a goose here with some additional stimulative measure. And so it weakened quite sharply, but then gradually came back and then rallied almost as much as it had come down initially, and then those gains faded, but then picked up again towards the close. So we're here with the S&P up 1.5% here today, and more importantly, the NASDAQ composite, which is so often a leader, up 2.5% here. So that's an impressive performance overall. Other reviews of the week. Here we can say bonds, the U.S. Treasury bonds, which had soared higher and then fell off sharply. Bond prices, pretty well everywhere, soared higher and then fell back on some sharpish profit taking. The U.S. dollar has mostly ranged. It's a little bit easier in here today, but we haven't had any big changes in here except against the Swiss franc, and we had the dollar breaking out to the upside of a little range against the Swiss franc. We, as you are probably well aware, the Swiss National Bank has been talking about quite frequently about various measures that it could use to weaken the Swiss franc. And that's had some effect, and from the advantageous position of a Swiss franc that had become very, very overextended. So the greenback's up to 0.8062 right now, and it has been almost a point higher, but that's still up a good chunk here today. And in precious metals, well, again, real drama in here. Surging on Monday, key day reversals on Tuesday, a battering on Wednesday, some tails to the downside on Thursday, strong gains on Friday. So gold, as I speak, is at 1826. That's up over $51. And silver is up at 41.35 and a half. Palladium 7.62, nearly 63. And platinum up to 18.34.90. That's around the high of the day. That's up just over $12.50. More on those in a moment, obviously. More on all of these in a moment. And industrial metals. They had been hit fairly hard, but have mostly firmed a bit in here this week, and including today. Copper is up a little bit more, 4.11 and a half as I speak. Crude oil, bit firmer in here. We're 111 and change for Brent, and the WTI is up to 85 and a half. Strong gains this week in some of the grains and beans. Star performer here has really been soybeans. Corn has been also quite steady. Wheat's the laggard, but it's rallied off the lower side of its range. Rough rice in a very tight consolidation above a big base formation. So there's some genuine strength there. And well, I think those are the main highlights. I just point out that most other commodities are firmer in here today. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, it's obviously been a very nervous time for stock markets, and not without reason, as you know. The Asian region is embroiled in, it's not quite the right word, but it's still smarting from the inflationary pressures that are being felt. And some of that's from property, but what the man on the street feels at least as much is the food price inflation, which has been a real problem from India to China. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing a whole lot. I mean, the inflation percentages may come down once they're annualized, because prices have been high for quite a long time. But in terms of the effect on people's pocketbook, well, that's not going to come down much at all. Now, that's what caused the central banks in Asia, of course, to raise interest rates, and they haven't shown any signs of reversing that policy. There's little doubt in my mind that they would reverse it if we saw stock markets and commodities take a battering in here, or with stock markets, you could say, take another battering. In other words, if they were concerned about growth, if they reach a point where they're more concerned about growth than inflation, then obviously they'll change their monetary policy. I think the stock markets just the ASEAN sector, which is such a strong holdout, is getting clipped here a little bit because we are seeing repatriation of capital by some investors. There are a number of European and North American investors who would have money in Asia, and some of that money has been pulled out. That would affect India as well. And India has shown that it's very capable of creating the rod for its own back. We get the political corruption saga just going on and on and on. And then this the protest and the hunger strike and so on, which is headline reading in the Times of India on a daily basis, front page item at any rate, goes on. And in the global beauty contest, which investors participate in, India, they can say, well, I don't like a look. I don't like the look of all these corruption problems here just at this time, and so it's easy to give it a miss or to pull some capital out. The net effect is to improve valuations, and the setback in global markets generally has improved valuations considerably. And I'm just going to take a little drink of water here. And that's the main reason why Owen has been doing these very thorough reviews of shares that we, particularly of shares that we like, and the number of big multinational companies, some of them with very good relative performance in terms of their share price action, are offering very attractive dividends. And that's what interests us the most. I mean, the economy gets most of the copy in terms of what we see on the financial channels and in the newspapers. But what's actually going on in the corporate world is more important, I would always say, in terms of investors. And these autonomies, as I call them, are doing exceptionally well. Now, if the U.S. slides into a recession, the knock-on effect of that in terms of confidence would weigh on corporate profits, which I think are already vulnerable, as I've been saying. I think estimates on corporate profits are still too high. But a little dip is no big deal. And I think it would take quite a clear recession. We're in that situation in Europe right now. And Germany supposedly, and well, not supposedly, as the strong man in Europe, but its GDP growth is really contracted very, very sharply here. And then, of course, the U.S. economy is just above that recession level. So my point is that if we see Germany, United States, UK slipping into recession, defined, of course, as two consecutive quarters of minus GDP, psychologically, I think that would be quite a big blow, and I think we would see that reflected in lower stock market prices overall. But that's quite a high risk. That's an uncomfortably high risk, although nothing is guaranteed in this environment. And if it doesn't happen, it's because interest rates, or short-term interest rates and long-term interest rates, are sufficiently low to enable these economies to muddle through. We will see. But the background to all this, and the key point, I think, in terms of investor interest, ought to be the performance of these autonomies, and particularly the higher yielding ones. And Owen's reviews point out that consumer shares, the big multinational consumer shares, are doing exceptionally well. And a red-hot tech sector, such as cloud computing, is still doing tremendously well. And technology is about the strongest, certainly up there as one of the equal strongest sectors going. So there's no reason here for despair on the part of investors. And it's just a matter of when do we pick up a little bit more of the companies that we actually like. It's important not to pay too much for them, but in a choppy market environment. But we are spoiled for choice here. The choppy action is likely to persist for a while. I certainly don't see any chance of us going back to a Goldilocks environment anytime soon. There is a chance that we may get out of this with no more than the short, sharp bear market. The big question in most technicians' minds as they look at the activity that we've seen really since the 8th and 9th of August. Remember, we had that meltdown in stock markets and then the bounce on the 8th or 9th. And we've been ranging subsequently. So the big question is this a support building phase which will launch a rally up into the overhanging top areas, or is this the first step beneath the top formation? So just a brief pause correcting the short-term oversold condition before markets go lower. Well, we can all guess on that. Everybody will have a view. We can all guess, and you got a 50-50 chance of being right. In this environment, I'm very content to let the market show me. And that's precisely what I'm going to do, although I would say that when I weigh up all the different factors, I think that would tip the odds more in favor of the downward resolution rather than an upward resolution. But this is not something that one can, I think, forecast with any real degree of confidence at this stage. What I can say with real confidence is that there are some much improved valuations out there. They may get even better. And that always works to the advantage of long-term investors. Okay, what about the precious metal sector? Well, now let me take government bonds first here. The yields had fallen to levels that really were discounting an alarming degree of economic deterioration. The strength of those multinational companies is one good reason for believing that the low yields are a big overreaction. Part of the move down is due to the yield play in which the banks are engaged. So if you have short-term interest rates, then it's quite easy. And if banks know that the short-term interest rates are going to remain low, that they can borrow from their respective central banks and leverage that money up in the long-dated government bonds and make a decent profit as long as everybody else is playing the same game and the central bank doesn't remove the punch bowl. But these yields are so low that strikes me as a very risky move overall. So again, I'm very much of the view that the next big move on yields is upwards rather than downwards. But frankly, I've been very surprised that yields have fallen as low as they have. In terms of currencies, we've got mostly ranging here right now, and I think that will continue for a while. I expect the Swiss franc to weaken further, Happiness is having the central bank and the trend on your side, and the trend has changed, at least in the short term, and the Swiss National Bank is very keen to see that currency weaken further. We may well get a similar situation with the yen, although we don't have that today. And on a long-term basis, the currencies that I would like the most are very much the growth economy currencies, the Asian-led growth economy currencies. But on a short-term basis, I think we're likely to see a further ranging for most of these currencies. What about the ultimate currency, being gold? And you know the recent technical history, that big overextension that always proves unsustainable. You get a sharp reaction. We had about a $210 reaction in gold. Is that enough? Is it now likely to take off again to the upside? Well, probably not. It's probably not going to take off again to the upside. And technically, it would be healthier for gold if it just ranged for a while. But I certainly don't expect any collapse in the price, and I do remain bullish on the intermediate to longer term outlook. And gold will move higher for all the reasons that we've been talking about, and many other people are now talking about, over the last decade. There's just too much fiat currency being printed, and the perception that gold is hard money and the best long-term store of value is continuing to spread. Gold is also a fear and a love story, as you've heard us say before. There are people who buy gold because they're frightened of stock markets or frightened of recessions or whatever. And fear has been a big factor in the run to the upside that we've seen this month, and which started last month. But then there are a lot of other people who just love gold. They feel more secure with it, and quite in addition to its jewelry appeal, they sleep better at night by owning gold. That's the love side, and both those are in play and will continue to be. And I see absolutely no evidence that this secular bull market is over. In fact, it could have years to run. The only thing that would cause me to change my mind on that would be if it actually went really seriously parabolic here in the short term. So I think the healthiest thing would be if gold just ranged for a few weeks, and then that would give it a sufficient consolidation, I think, to perform quite well over the medium term as well as the longer term. I wouldn't be surprised if silver and platinum give gold a good run for the money on the upside in the next phase. In looking at the last decade, when one of the precious metals has clearly accelerated higher relative to the others, and I mentioned this point yesterday, that it then tends to take a well-deserved rest, and more of the speculative interests swings to one of the other metals. And that could easily be silver or platinum, and statistically it's platinum's turn. But silver is more closely associated with gold. I think they'll all go higher, actually. Now, among other commodities, the recent strength or continued strength of the grain and bean complex does concern me. And we still have problems in producing sufficient quantities of these staple foods due to the very turbulent weather patterns. It's not just markets that are turbulent, as you've seen. And if we get soybeans breaking up out of this current long trading range in a major way, and it's threatening to do that, in my opinion. And then rough rice. If we get another run to the upside by that staple food, that's going to cause problems, and it will give central banks in Asia another reason not to shift their interest rates lower. So commodity price inflation, which has certainly been a problem this year, I think it's going to remain a problem for a while. The most serious form of commodity price inflation is when crude oil blasts to the upside. It's ranging right now, as you know, but it's ranging, certainly the Brent is ranging at a higher level than we would like to see. So that will also stay central bankers' hands in terms of moving away from their restrictive monetary policies. With growth slowing, we may be in an environment where they don't do much at all, just leave rates where they actually are. But a view of mine that I've often expressed here is that in terms of favorable catalysts for the global economy and for global stock markets generally, a shift in monetary policy from restrictive to a looser stance within Asia would really be quite stimulative and quite bullish. But we're not there yet. And I think that's pretty much it in terms of the important factors. I'll be on holiday next week, and look forward to the rest. I'll certainly keep an eye on the markets while I'm away, and I wish you every success in your own dealings in those markets. All the best.